Well, welcome back to This Week in the Association with Kevin Lucco. I'm Rob Pannier. Kevin, we start with the St. Paul Saints once again. They sweep the Salina Stockade before the All-Star break to pull within a game out of first place, but still a lot of concerns going on for manager George Samus.
Yeah, there's two different ways you might want to look at the Salina series. Was it a bounce back after losing three tough games at Winnipeg, or is it just a tourniquet for what's a bigger problem with the team right now? They won all three. I'd say Saturday was the closest of the three games. Friday and Sunday, they kind of cruised, but it's just so hard to gauge that team when you sweep against Salina. Granted, Salina was coming in with off a sweep of Sioux City, but yeah, I don't think there were many questions answered for St. Paul during those three games.
The bittersweet part about the series is the fact that Kes Carter and Tony Thomas hurt. Thomas looks like he'll be out 7 to 10 days. Kes Carter day to day. Boy, the injuries are really piling up for this team.
Yeah, and that's the wrong time of the year, too. Going into the stretch run, you like to have your guys healthy. They're going into a stretch now, home and home for four games with Sioux City, and then, boy, they're going to the meat grinder against the Salt Dogs in Winnipeg starting on Sunday.
The most disappointing news, it looks like, coming out of the All-Star break is that Caleb Thielmar will likely be out for at least a few more weeks, might even be done for the season at this point. How critical is his loss for the team?
I don't even think you can put it on a gauge how critical the loss is. But, you know, like we may have talked about before, it opens up an opportunity for somebody else. And in the one close game they had with Salina over the weekend, we saw Ken Frosch kind of fill in the eighth inning setup man role, and Vinny Natoli came in and got like an inning plus save and looked pretty good, had good life on his fastball. So I think you're looking at those two guys as the ones that are going to try to fill in the setup and closer spot. They acquired Chandler Hawkins out of the St. Louis Cardinals system. He pitched on Friday and maybe on Sunday too, but he looked decent. A good left-handed arm, and we'll see how he fits into their plans too.
Because of what we saw this last Sunday, I would think that there has to be some optimism that there is a bullpen out there that can deliver for this team if called upon to do so.
Yeah, it was actually Saturday night. Ryan Zimmerman went 5 1/3, and George Samus pieced it together from there using several guys, and I think that's what we're going to see a lot of in the second half. Or as of right now, as we're talking, there are only three starters on the pitching staff, and it's an 11-man staff, if my count is correct, so you have eight guys in the bullpen, so that does allow Samus a chance to kind of be more like a major league manager and have your guys come in situations rather than have to eat up innings. So look for that coming out of the Saints, but got to think they got to go out and find at least a fourth starter, especially with this stretch coming up where I believe they got one off day the rest of the season.
Well, before we head on looking around the rest of the league, we welcome back Charlie. What's going on with Charlie these days?
Oh, let me get him over here as usual. He's sniffing around in the refrigerator.
Charlie, get out of the fridge. Enter the show. Oh, all right, man.
Hey, what's going on, Robin?
Hey, Charlie, it's Rob. How are you doing?
You know, I'm hanging in there. Things are going okay. But, oh, man, we're getting back to the battle park tonight, but I wasn't very happy with my experience there on Sunday.
What happened?
Well, Kevin and I went up to the ball game. I believe they were playing against Liva, and I wanted a bag of peanuts. Usually I'll have hot dogs, but we had a late lunch, so I was going to snack on a bag of peanuts, and then when I saw what the promotion was for the game, it said peanut-free day. So I thought, well, just great. I can go up to the ballpark and have myself a free bag of peanuts. So I go and have Kevin run and get me peanuts, where he didn't get too far because he turned around and told me, Charlie, they don't sell peanuts today. I said, well, that's a bunch of bull. The schedule right here says peanut-free day. How can you have peanuts at the ballpark for free and then not have any peanuts? Well, you understand that, Robin?
Yeah, Charlie, what it meant was that they were not going to have peanuts. They were going to be free of peanuts, not that peanuts were going to be free.
What?
Yeah, they were not going to allow peanuts in the ballpark. They were going to be free from having peanuts, but not making peanuts free to purchase.
Oh, man. Well, that don't make any sense to me. If they ever have hot dog free day, you can guarantee I ain't going to be within 200 miles of that ballpark.
Well, Charlie, it's because, you know, a lot of people out there are allergic to peanuts, and so they wanted to kind of do something to recognize those out there who are battling allergies.
Well, my doctor says I'm supposed to be allergic to hot dogs, but I seem to keep finding them.
I would think that you were made of hot dogs at this point.
Oh, there ain't nothing wrong with a hot dog, I'll tell you that. And, you know, I'm watching the ball game on Sunday, and the Saints have a pitcher named Mark Hamburger.
Yep.
Who names herself after a hamburger?
Well, family name.
Oh, that can't be a family name. I looked up some stuff, and I think I'm going to change my name.
What are you going to name it yourself?
What do you think? Charlie Hot Dog.
I think that'd be the perfect name for you. Perfect name.
I think the ladies might kind of like it.
Speaking of the ladies, what about Gert?
Well, I tell you, she's kind of a tough one. I don't know about her sometimes.
What's the problem?
Well, I'm sitting there watching the ball game, and Gert is over flirting with other men. Matter of fact, I was in the ballpark, and I saw a guy with lipstick on his face, and I knew it came from my Gert. So I shoved him. I said, you stay away from my woman. And he just gave me a weird look. Robin, I don't know. Don't know it's going to work out with Gert, but I'm going to make it work if I have to.
I hope so. That'd be a great combination.
I bet she likes hot dogs.
I would not have no doubt about it.
Well, Robin, I got to get going. I got a ball game to go to tonight.
Okay, it's Rob, though. But
I got to go have a snack.
All right, well, I'll talk to you next week, okay?
All right, see you next week, Robin.
Wow, that's Charlie, Kevin.
Yeah, he's kind of becoming a cult hero of the podcast, too. We may have to come up with Charlie T-shirts or something to capitalize off of that.
Absolutely.
Especially if he changed his name to Charlie Hot Dog. That's, I don't know, that sounds, well, you can kind of go several directions with that name.
Well, let's continue on around the league. Moving on in the north to the Winnipeg Goldeyes. After sweeping St. Paul, they head down to Kansas City, where they lose 2 out of 3. Now they have two teams breathing down their neck, as the red-hot Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks and the Saints are right behind them. They welcome Fargo into town for 4 and then head on to Sioux City for 4. Tell me, a week from now, what's the narrative we're talking about for this team?
Boy, if I knew that. That's going to be quite the clash up in Shaw Park. Fargo comes in red hot, and Winnipeg can't seem to score fewer than 10 runs a game up there. So something's going to have to give on that one. I wish I had a prediction for you on that, but wow, it's going to be some good baseball up there.
The one thing I kind of find surprising about the Goldeyes is with such an incredible lineup that they have, what are we talking about, four guys in the top five in batting, why they aren't dominating this division even more?
I think the pitching has kind of held them back. Edwin Carl and Kevin McGovern have been a solid two starters, but they're not getting what they're looking for out of Mikey O'Brien, and the other two starters have been erratic, so that may have held them back. And plus, it just seems like this team, you get them away from Shaw Park, and a lot of nights the offense just doesn't show up, and we saw that in Kansas City in the two games that they lost down there. It's kind of hard to explain. Shaw Park's not really like a hitter's park, so that can't be an alibi. So this team just looks like it seems more confident when they're playing at home.
The hottest team in the North right now is the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, who enter the break winning eight straight. They're head up to Winnipeg to start out the second half with four games up there. How critical is this four-game series for them?
If they take care of business, and St. Paul plays also, they win three out of four, they come back tied for first. That's not enough motivation. I don't know what is. And winning eight in a row, they're probably a team that didn't want to see the All-Star break. They probably want to just keep on going. Good story coming out of there. Cody McFarland, that had his professional debut against the Saints, only goal an inning and a third, bounced back last Saturday. Threw a complete game, two-hitter in a game that went 2 hours and 3 minutes, my kind of ball game. So we'll see if McFarland is for real, and Jose Almirante seems to be back in the rotation now. And we got those two, Tyler Alexander and Tyler Herron. I think they're set up well for the series, and we'll see how it goes.
An addition they make just before the All-Star break is adding Brandon Tierney. He's hitting .286 in six games for them. How much can they count on him being a difference maker in their lineup?
Difference maker, we'll see. I mean, they do have enough guys on hand already that can be a difference maker, but Tierney plugs up a hole. I believe he's second baseman, I believe, correct?
I mean, he played third and second, so I think he can do both for them. So,
yeah, I'm guessing he'll be mostly second with Mazzola over at third. So that seems to have been a black hole for them this year, is second base. They've had a couple other guys they've had in, and it hasn't worked out. So as long as he plays adequately and fills the void, they'll help the Redhawks out immensely.
The Sioux Falls Canaries enter the All-Star break down six in the North Division. With all the talk about Winnipeg and St. Paul at this point, they kind of flying under the radar here, but the problem for them so far has been consistency. They're just not able to pull out a long run of winning six, seven games. What is it that's hampering them from having that kind of success?
Hard to say with them. They've just kind of been an average team ever since they swept the Saints in St. Paul. And we thought there's also hope before the St. Paul series. They took one against Wichita, but ever since then, it's just kind of been a pretty bland effort by them. Pitching outside of Grady Wood and occasional start from Joel Bercher, was starting pitching, just like seemingly in most of the league, has been a problem for the Canaries. They've got a tough one coming up all the All-Star break, having Lincoln in town for three, and this is kind of an odd schedule. They play three games against Lincoln, the last game of that being on Saturday night. Then on Sunday afternoon, they play a doubleheader against Sioux City, and then have to go up to Fargo for three, so I hope Mike Meyer had his guys get rested up really good, because, boy, that's kind of a meat grinder coming out of the All-Star break.
Kind of a crazy schedule this entire weekend. A lot of teams play somebody Saturday and then have a different opponent on Sunday. I don't know why that was by design, but it should be interesting, to say the least. the combination of Jabari Henry, Ty Morrison, and Chris Jacobs has just been unbelievably good for Sioux Falls right now. I'm just thinking that for them to make a serious run, they have to get at least two other guys in this lineup to start hitting with some authority.
Yeah, we have to mention, too, Morrison got the hitter of the week from the American Association last week. And, yeah, you're correct. We need to see guys, I'm thinking, you know, Aaron Gretz step up. And you got so many young guys, Mark Kidd and Mealy Kidd. They're relying on a lot of young guys to supplement the big hitters in the lineup. And they'll need to step up if they want to make a serious run at things.
Heading to the Central, we begin with the Lincoln Salt Dogs, who are on quite a roll at this time. They sweep Wichita this last weekend. 10 straight wins at home and 16-6 in July. We were talking about we were looking for some team in the Central to rattle off a big winning streak or a big run. It sure looks like the Lincoln Salt Dogs answered the call.
Yeah, I think they've stepped up to be the team to beat, but seems like every time we anoint someone as a team to beat, they get beat. So maybe I just jinx them. But
could very well be possible. A guy that is really kind of impressing me that you don't really hear a lot about for some reason is Cesar Valera. He replaces Tony Thomas in the All-Star game after Thomas had gotten hurt Sunday. Guy's hitting .319, 39 runs scored, 31 driven in. Why isn't he getting a little more attention?
I think it's because he doesn't have the gaudy power numbers you see out of a lot of the other guys. He just finds a way to get on base. It's not flashy. It's not something that catches the eyes of scouts, but there's some good, solid, consistent play out of him. And you got other guys in the lineup, like Kurt Smith is stepping up, finally starting hitting for some power, and he's got a .308 average, and Brandon Jacobs is pacing them with 9 homers and 31 RBIs, so I can see where maybe Valera kind of gets lost in that a little bit.
Speaking of gaudy numbers, these are some numbers that really leapt out at me about these Lincoln Salt Dogs. 4 guys on this pitching staff have an ERA under 2, and 3 have an ERA under 3 additional have an ERA under 3. It's not really difficult to figure out why they're doing so well.
No, it's has to be the best pitching staff in the league. Saw it like last weekend. Brian McAfee protected the Salt Dogs, throwing 8 shutout innings against Wichita. See how I went with that? McAfee protection. Okay, computer stuff. All right, anyways. Solid pitching, man. Like they always say, pitching wins. So no secret that Lincoln is starting to pull away in the Central.
The Gary South Shore Railcats have been kind of the enigma in this division. They've never had a winning streak longer than 4, but have never had a losing streak longer than 3. When you look at a team like that that's having that kind of run or that kind of play this season, are they the team that sneaks in winning the division because they're never too high or too low? Or is it that they, because they can't get on a big run, they just can't win a division because they can't win get on the big run of 10 or 8 games in a row?
I think this is the time of year where having so many rookies and young players on the team is kind of a detriment because they're not used to a pennant chase, so to speak. You don't really get that kind of atmosphere when you're playing in college ball or summer leagues where it's a really short season. So, yeah, a lot of young guys might not realize what it takes to kind of carry things out through a 100-game season, and we'll see what happens if they fade away or if Hager can kind of keep the boat sailing.
The one thing I guess I've kind of never understood around the league has been the fact that there's nobody really with gaudy numbers in Gary. The team has the second best fielding percentage and is ranked in the top 4 or 5 in ERA. Nothing that really leaps out at you about how great that they are, except for that fielding percentage. And I'm thinking, why aren't more managers looking at how he's paying attention to all these small details and winning games?
A lot of other managers are getting the players that are established and probably aren't going to be so focused on working on their fielding like the younger guys are with Taggart. So it's kind of a catch-22. Do you want an inexperienced guy that will listen to you, or do you want a potentially impact player that may not be so much into working on the defense in the middle of August? So I guess a lot of managers have chosen the route of getting the best players available, and Taggart's gone for the young, influential guys.
Moving on to the Kansas City T-Bones, they entered July as one of the hottest teams in the league, but are suddenly struggling right now. This starting rotation is going to have to step up their game.
Yeah, it seems like outside of Carroll and Matt Sergi that the T-Bones are having a hard time getting consistent starts. But like we said, though, boy, there's just a real shortage of starting pitching all over the league, and not a lot of guys sitting at home right now that can join the team and be a third starter. So I guess you got to trudge on with who you got and hope that you find something. Maybe pull a guy out of the bullpen, stretch him out, and see if he can be a good starter.
What do you think this team has to do to be more consistent? Because they just don't seem to get on a run either.
Well, I think it is the pitching. They do have some offense down there. The numbers aren't overly gaudy. They made an acquisition with Tyler Horan. He's only played 7 games, but has gone 5-13 and for a .314 average, and he's been a nice addition to the lineup. You know, they find ways to score runs, but yeah, the pitching's got to come around and get a catalyst for a run down there. Otherwise, I don't think we're going to see Kansas City making an impact.
The one guy who's really having an impressive season for them is Kevin Keyes, who played in the All-Star game this last Tuesday night. Is he an MVP candidate at this point?
Oh, boy, it's hard to say. There are so many good hitting first basemen out there right now that Keyes kind of gets a little lost in the mix. But, yeah, he's a solid player, good All-Star, good guy to have around.
We finish up in the Central Division with Sioux City, just 3.5 games out of the wild card, surprisingly still in the race at this point.
Yeah, they experienced the lows of lows and the highest of highs this week, past week, getting swept at home by Salina and then going on the road to Sioux City and sweeping the Railcats. It looks like they're starting to shake up the roster a bit. So that may have woke some guys up there still around and may have added some new blood to the team. One guy that needs to really get it going, and he's capable of it, we've seen it with St. Paul, is Kramer Snead. He's had 2 decent outings the last 2 times out. But boy, if he could find anything close to his form of 2015, he could be a key to helping turn the team around.
2 guys that are really stepping up for the team are Jace Rae and Tony Campana. This might be the best 1-2 leadoff group in the American Association.
Oh, correct. Campana, it was just a matter of him getting healthy. We saw it in the last series of St. Paul. He was healthy and playing. Plays a really good defense in the outfield, too. So it's always good to be strong up the middle, and Campana in center field, that's about as strong as you can get. And Jace Rae, well, we've seen him in this league long enough, we know he can hit. So that's a great daily double they got in Sioux City.
We head to the south with the Wichita Wingnuts, who have a very comfortable 13-game lead coming out of the All-Star break, but losers of 7 straight in 10 of their last 13, and they are only on game 4 of an 18-game road trip. There has to be some concern here.
Well, I do think there is some concern because they're facing adversity for the first time this year, and when you face adversity, I guess you find out who your team leaders are, and maybe they're starting to find out that some guys might not be as good as they thought they were, and Pete Rose Jr. has enough of a cushion to find out a little more about his team and maybe trade some guys, release some guys, and bring some guys in and kind of fine-tune the team. But I don't think they're in any concern for losing division lead. That's a heck of a lead they got right now, and I don't see any of the other two contenders in that division making a run at it. So, yeah, it's just a time for Pete Rose Jr. to just kind of find out more about his team.
Matt Chavez has been kind of a funk these last 8-10 days, and the team has struggled at the same time that he is. Is this just a true indicator of how when he rolls, the team rolls, and when he struggles, the team struggles?
I think you find that all with a lot of guys, too. It's, you know, a lot of teams will. The offense all seems to struggle at the same time, or they all get hot at the same time. So I think that's what you're seeing with the Wing Nuts. And Chavez is a young guy. We got to keep that in mind. And young guys are going to have their ups and downs. He's had a ton of ups in his first year and a half in this league, but it's probably the first time he's really faced some adversity, and we'll see how he comes out of it.
Also facing adversity, the starting staff hasn't been as formidable as we saw early on in the year, with the exception of Eddie Medina and Alex Boshears, who are both getting their game on track and really performing well. But Cooper, Kane, and Kuchmal have battled a little bit over the last few weeks. I'm wondering if there's cause for concern that, or Tim Brown got hammered in his outing against Lincoln a few nights ago. Is this just kind of the dog days of summer, or where should their concerns lie with these guys?
I think when you go into Lincoln, it's after playing a lot of games within your own division, and all due respect to the Railroaders and Airhawks, it's definitely stepping class up when you're going against the South Dogs, and maybe the Wing Nuts were kind of caught by surprise on that, and I think you saw the results getting swept in Lincoln. So, yeah, it could be a wake-up call for some of the other guys to say, hey, need to get it going. Got to get on track for the playoffs.
The Cleburne Railroaders enter 13 games out. They have a big chance this weekend when they start out with 4 games against Wichita. Does a sweep make them a contender again?
I think it does tons for the confidence, and I don't know what their schedule is after that, but if they get a bunch of games, possibly against Salina and maybe against Texas, who has a similar record, it could get them back into it, but yeah, that's, I find it highly unlikely they're going to run the table against the Wing Nuts. I think Wichita's got enough talent to get back on track again.
What I'm wondering about this team is that the lowest in the league in terms of number of home runs, which is kind of surprising, to be honest with you, but 21 home runs coming out of the All-Star break. And I'm thinking if you do wind up sweeping this weekend, and you've got to believe that you have some kind of chance, and I got to believe then that Gabe Suarez has to make a move to start getting some power in this lineup.
Yeah, he made a couple moves recently. Well, there's a gentleman, Derek Piles, that's been an independent league veteran, and Suarez brought him in, and he is hitting .373 with a homer and 14 RBIs in, I believe, like 17, 20 games. And he also brought back Peachy Belay, who people that are familiar with the American Association around like 2006 through 2009 will remember him as an impact player for the Lincoln South Dogs. He was brought out of retirement. It hasn't gone so well for him, but I'm sure he's still trying to find his rhythm after being out of baseball for, at least 5 years. So Suarez isn't just sitting around. He's trying to make moves. Well, see how it turns out, and you know, I think this weekend is going to kind of dictate maybe if does Cleveland look to make trades at the deadline, or do they still consider themselves a contender? So we'll wait and see on that.
Texas, another team that's 13 games out in the South, with Wichita struggling, the Airhawks playing so well lately, are they a team that can consider themselves back in the race?
This is a team that really could have benefited from the old format of having two halves. If you had a two-half format, Texas would be sitting pretty well in the South right now. But as it is, yes, there's still on the bottom looking up, and you know, it's a lot of ground to make up with not a ton of games. Okay, it's like, what, we've got like 40 games left?
Yeah, about 40, yeah.
It's still a lot to make up, and I just don't, I like how they've been playing, but it's just a lot of ground to make up in that shorter time.
The big surprise is Tyler Bremer, who was having a fine season in their starting rotation, opts to retire. I'm hearing that he is going to go into coaching. I'm wondering what impact he has, or what impact that has on the team.
Well, I think when you lose an arm like that, that's been part of it. It's been a pretty decent pitching staff down there. Yes, it does hurt. The team doesn't score a ton of runs yet, so they're a team that, much like Lincoln, is kind of built around their pitching. So, yeah, that's definitely a huge blow for the Bearhawks, but it's also an opportunity for somebody else to step up.
There were two guys in particular in Texas that have been interesting stories to me this year. I'm going to start with, first of all, with T.J. Bozeman. This guy, his first few years, he had 2 years in Grand Prairie and then pitched in the Frontier League last year where he was honestly getting hammered. Boy, 3.12 ERA this season and has looked brilliant since joining the starting rotation. Somebody must have really worked this guy, or he just is a real testament to perseverance and learning and growing and becoming a quality pitcher.
To get hit hard as he was the last 3 years and for him to even get an opportunity shows you that there had to have been something there to start with. Whether it was something they found that was mechanical, whether it was confidence, whether it was a new grip on a pitch, Bozeman has found it and has become one of the better pitchers in the league. And, you know, yeah, that's a great testament to independent baseball that these guys get that, you know, we always say it's a second chance league. And, well, it looks like Bozeman's on about his fourth chance, and this one, he's making a count. So, yeah, it's definitely a good news story there.
One guy I think a lot of people raised their eyebrows about when he was hired as the manager of this team was Billy Martin Jr., no experience in managing or coaching anywhere, and he admittedly will point out that he struggled in managing his first month of the season, but you can't argue with the results now.
No, you can't, and he had a good man with Butch Henry, who's been involved with managing teams for quite a few years. I'm sure Henry has been showing him the ropes, so to speak, and has been a really good right-hand man for him. So always good to surround yourself with good people, right?
Absolutely. That's why I hang around you.
Oh, boy. That's not raising the bar too high.
We move to Salina, who starts out the second half with a series in Gary. They only have 7 more games out of their division, 4 against Kansas City, 3 against Sioux Falls. I have to say that I'm at least happy about this because this isn't a situation where they're going to play a deciding factor in division races because they don't really play many games out of the division anymore.
Yeah, it was good to see them. I'm sure Montgomery wasn't happy, but it was good to see them win a series or sweep a series in Sioux City and at least find some success. A friend of mine talked to a parent of one of the players up in St. Paul this weekend. They said the guys are tired. They're tired, they're worn out, but they're still going out there and they're playing hard. I never saw any quit in the team in the 3 games I saw in St. Paul, so yeah, I give them credit for hanging with it, and they have brought in other guys from the Pecos League that have been playing well. They have brought them up, and if you look at their lineup, there are guys that are playing pretty decent. So, you know, if they're playing a lot of games against the South, we're talking about Cleburne and Texas getting back into it. Well, you could see Salina having a little bit to say about that, too.
Yes, they could, for sure.
Matchup they got.
I think both of us have seen some pretty quality play out of this Salina Stockade team this season, and I'm wondering at this point, who are some guys who, when you look at the team, you say, I wouldn't be surprised to see this guy in an American Association roster next season?
I think a guy we've talked about several times, Kubi Meyer. He's been with them the whole year. He's hitting .323, so that can't be a fluke after, I believe, a couple hundred at bats. So doesn't hit for a ton of power, but he'd be definitely be a good guy to, for an American Association team to look at for next season. A guy I saw pitch in relief that looked good was Dylan Sonnefrank. He's pitched in 10 games, got 12 strikeouts in 12 innings, and a 3.64 ERA. And that we've talked about before, Tyler Herr, who I believe he's been around with one or two other association teams, if I'm not mistaken. Got a 3.75 ERA. And the number I kind of stood out to me was 31 strikeouts in 24 innings. So the cupboard's not totally bare in Salina, but unfortunately for the way the rules were set up before the year began, they are stuck there, and God, he can't exactly go out and start selling them off to American Association teams. So but the players knew it coming in, and I guess they're going to have to just kind of wait till next year and see if they can hook on with an association team. So I guess it's summer's kind of just been a 100-game tryout for next year. So we'll see how many of the Salina guys we see on other teams next year.
Well, I think the big thing that the players were looking for was an opportunity to showcase their talent, and I think we've seen five or six guys that have done that exact thing. I would not be surprised to see Jesse Baker catching for somebody within this league or even beyond this league next season. Cody Kaufman has shown power and has hit for a high average as well. And a lot of people aren't kind of high on this guy, but I really thought Jimmy Heck has played quite a fine job at second base for this team and has hit around 270, 280 most of the season long. So I would not be surprised to see six or seven of these guys on an American Association roster next season. Well, Kevin, we're here at the midpoint of the season, so it's time to start talking about our predictions of things we're expecting for the remainder of the year here. So let's begin with, who's your midseason MVP at this point?
As much as I don't like handing these kind of things out, the guy I would go to as far as midseason hitting MVP would be Wes Darvall of Winnipeg. He's started off strong, and he hasn't slowed down, and it was a huge three-run homer he hit off of Mark Hamburger last Tuesday night to win a game for Winnipeg. I believe that was their first division lead of the season. And right now they're up by two games, and Darvall has been a huge contributor up there.
You know, I have to say I like that prediction a lot. 21 stolen bases on top of that, only struck out like 25 or 26 times and 234 at-bats. He's just been an all-around player, and I find myself leaning towards two guys like that. Martin Medina in Wichita is another guy, I think second in the league right now in batting. These guys are just every day, you know, playing great defense, doing the small things to help a team win games, and I think they're not going to have really gaudy numbers. But they're the kind of guy that you build a team around and you expect to get hard play out of, and everybody rallies around them. So I think, you know, Darvall would be my pick at this particular point as well. Who do you see as the top pitcher so far?
I hate to be the homer, but still got to go with Mark Hamburger. He's in double digits for wins now, and he was probably one pitch away from the Saints from salvaging a game up in Winnipeg. Like you talked about with injuries to the Thielbar, that more than likely Hamburger would have handed the ball over to Thielbar for that ninth inning, but he bounced back, got them a win on Sunday against the Stockade, and from the looks of it, it's George Samus may be leaning towards going with a four-man staff like Taggart and Gary, so he's got a horse like Hamburger that will want the ball with 3 days rest. It doesn't matter to him. So, yeah, I would definitely go with Mark Hamburger on that count.
I can't find myself disagreeing with you on that, because I could look at a number of pitchers out there that are having good years. Kevin McGovern, Alex Boshiers, Patrick Mincy, there's Tyler Alexander. A lot of these guys have had really great years. But there's some category to them that's kind of glaring. McGovern's 7-2, which is fine, and it's a 2.17 ERA, and he's struck out 76 and 91 innings. But you would think a guy in a situation like that would be 8 or 9 and 2, okay, especially with that lineup batting behind him. I look at a guy like Patrick Mincy, and he's 6 and 5, which isn't any fault of his own because of the fact that his team isn't hitting it all for him. But the 5 losses you have to kind of consider into the spot. Hamburger's team is struggling. 10 and 2, though. I mean, the team has to know every time he steps to the mound that they're going to win games, and that's not something they can say with virtually anybody else on the staff right at the moment. So I have to agree with you on that one. How about our manager of the year?
Yeah, his only
go ahead.
Mark's only flaw has been the first inning for some reason. I was talking to his dad about that last night. Mark gave up a run in the first inning of the All-Star game too, but for some reason he seems to give up a run in the first inning quite a bit. I was joking with that maybe they ought to have a guy in the bullpen throw the first inning and then have Mark begin the game in the second. Kind of a backwards mentality.
A little psychological for him there. That might work. How about our manager of the year? What are you thinking about that at this point?
Oh, boy, that's a tough call to make, but I would have to go with Mike Meyer in Sioux Falls. Granted, he's kind of going to fly under the radar because they're in fourth place, but considering how far down they were to start the season with, he's managed to pick up some good players and get some good efforts out of guys that are a little less heralded. And he's got the Canaries 6 games back, and I believe 4 back in the wild card. So we'll go with the dark horse here and go with Mike Meyer.
I'm totally with you on the dark horse side of this because I think that there are 3 managers right now that have done such an amazing job with teams that should not be where they are right at this point. And so I'm looking at Mike Meyer as one example, Billy Martin Jr., and Steve Montgomery, because let's face it, Sioux City has been decimated by injuries at this point. And he's got his team just, 3.5 or 4.5 out in the wild card race right now, where I think a lesser manager would be 11, 12 out at this point. And I know that they're not going to get consideration probably because they're not going to be in the division races. They're not going to be the team that's, 58 and 42 or something. But in terms of job that they've done with the team, I think that either one of those 3 would be a great choice. They've each earned it as far as I'm concerned. Well, the tough call, though, Kevin, who are we seeing as our division winners and wild card team at this point?
Wow, you kind of thrown me a tough one there. I hate to say it. I'm a homer. The Saints are my team. But I would say Winnipeg is going to win the North. Lincoln has the Central, and Wichita has the South. The wild card's going to be a toughie. But we have a saying in St. Paul, in George we trust. And I just have a feeling that somehow the Saints are going to sneak into the wild card spot, much like they did in 2011 when they had to win in the final day of the year to clinch a spot. And, yeah, what a dynamite first-round series that would be once again with St. Paul playing Winnipeg. Not to mention the South would be a heck of a matchup, too, with Lincoln and Wichita. So that's what I'm going with. It's hard to tell. There's good cases to be made for plenty of other teams, but that's my opinion, and that's what I'm going with.
Well, at this point, I got to say that the South looks like a pretty much foregone conclusion for Wichita. I think Lincoln, because of that pitching staff, is going to be incredibly difficult for any team there to catch, and they seem to have caught fire here in July and aren't looking to turn back away from that. So I'm going to go with them in the Central. In the North, boy, that's a tough call because I think any one of those 3 teams could wind up winning this division at this point. And that's going to be the team that wins that division is going to wind up having the only opportunity to make the playoff. I think the wild card team comes out of the Central this year. So it's a question, each one of these teams, the Winnipeg is the team that seems to be the strongest out of this and has the least number of glaring holes to them. So they look like they would be the North winner, which would be sad because my feeling is that if you compare the three or four teams in the wild card right now, Gary, St. Paul, and Kansas City in particular, you have Gary with not a lot of power, great speed team, great at manufacturing runs, and then you have Kansas City and St. Paul, who are both exceptional power teams with no real stolen base, not really the ability to manufacture runs, which usually at the time of the year when you need every game is kind of tension-packed, you want to have the ability to make runs happen for yourself. So I'm going to go with those Gary South Shore Railcats to be the wild card team, and I'll never be invited back to CHS Field after I say this. So there we go.
I'm going to leave notes all over the ballpark when I get through this afternoon. Rob is counting the Saints out.
We look this week.
I'll have your picture on it.
Do you know this guy? Don't let him in.
They're gonna do like Major League, where they're gonna get a cardboard cut out of you, and I don't think they'll do something a little different. They'll just kind of cut parts off of your body with every win.
The strike zone with George Samus will be coming out today, and that might be the last one of the season after today. We have some exciting stuff going on this weekend. Great series that are happening over the next week. Tell us about what you're looking forward to.
Well, I think like we were talking about, the big one's going to be up in Winnipeg with Fargo playing four with the Goldeyes, and I think it's going to be a telling series for the Saints when they go down to Lincoln starting on Sunday.
I think the St. Paul Saints and Sioux City starting out the second half is a big series for both teams. This is going to tell us if Sioux City is going to have a chance to continue to remain in the race, and if St. Paul is to lose two out of three out of this or even get swept, that might be crippling to them as well. I'm interested also to see what happens between Wichita and Cleburne. Is Cleburne comes away with a four-game sweep out of this, I think they have a shot of getting back in this division race, but if they lose even one of those games, they're probably done at that point, I would say.
They always got to treat that like a playoff series.
I think they do. I think they have to look at this like they're down 3-0 in the playoffs and they've got a sweep or they're done, and that's the only way that they can wind up going on. And I look at that same way for Sioux City and St. Paul. I know it's crazy when the Saints are just one game out in the North, but I think because of how they struggled heading into the All-Star break, they just have to come away with at least two victories, if not a sweep of the Explorers. And they played really well against the Explorers at home, so there's no reason not to believe they can't do that. So, Kevin, otherwise, what do we got going on as we close out this week? What do we got going on with you there?
Well, at the 10th inning stretch blog, we it was a big one. We just came out with it this morning. We did the all-time 25-year St. Paul Saints team, and tell you, it was a lot of hard work that went into it. I think I probably put like 3-4 hours into coming up with the team and putting the blog together, but hopefully we've included everyone that deserves to be on the team, and I came up with plenty of honorable mentions, and even after the blog came out, I was kind of like, oh yeah, I should probably add him. But yeah, it came out, thought it looked good, and the people that are interested in the Saints, I would recommend taking a look at that. I also did the blog for the 2007 St. Paul Saints, and they were the team that for the second year in a row came within one game of winning the American Association Championship before losing to Fort Worth. So I'll be keeping that series going on until the end of the year when I hopefully am caught up, and we'll have a wrap-up of the 25th season of St. Paul Saints baseball. And of course, that can be found at 10thinningstretch.blogspot.com.
For myself, on Minor League Sports Report, we'll have today there will be the eight teams that are in action. There will be recaps and discussion of what's gone on in the first half of the season for each of them that you'll be able to check out. Plus, we'll have George Samus's strike zone will be on today, and we'll have Steve Montgomery and Pete Rose Jr.'s shows on tomorrow. And then we'll have some stories heading out there. We'll be looking at Richard Prigatano from down there in Wichita, Jesse Baker will have a story from Salina coming out, and Bobby Brown heading out this weekend as well. Kevin, tell us a little bit about our Twitter.
Well, we're still going strong at the handle to find us is at TWITA Baseball. And it's kind of gave the Twitter handle the last 2-3 days off with no games going on. Just kind of retweeted a bunch of stories from throughout the league. But we'll be back at it again tonight. If you haven't been on there before, generally the gist of it is that once the starting lineups for the evening come out, that we will retweet those, and we retweet updates from throughout the league. So if you want your one-stop spot for updates throughout the league, that would be your place to go. That's at TWITA Baseball.
Awesome.
On Twitter.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us this week, Kevin.
You're welcome.
We hope to see you all next week on This Week –